So all these views of history have their merits, all contain certain elements of truth. But tonight I'm going to take a rather different view. I'm going to pursue a line of thought which I started some years ago. I think it was in 1972, in a lecture which I gave entitled Current World Problems, a Buddhist View. In this lecture I spoke of the axial age, as indeed I'd spoken many times before, and also quite a number of times since. The axial age is a term coined by the modern German thinker, existentialist thinker, Karl Jaspers. And it indicates the period of history from 800 to 200 BC. And Jaspers called this period of history the axial age because it was, in fact, the turning point in human history. All over the civilized world at that time, great changes took place. Took place especially in Greece, in Palestine, in Persia, in India, and in China. There's no need for me to go into details tonight. In any case, some of the things that I've said on various occasions, in various contexts, about the axial age, have been brought together in the current Mitrata, number 17, on the true individual. But the great point about this period, the great point about the axial age, the point I wish to stress tonight, is that it saw the appearance, for the first time in history, of a number, a great number, of outstanding individuals. That it is a people who stood out from the group, who were not just part of the group, whether that group was the family, the tribe, the nation, or even an empire. These people were individuals who were self-aware, who were emotionally positive, autonomous, and responsible. They were people whose energies flowed freely and harmoniously. They were people who thought for themselves, thought independently, and who were free from group conditioning, not psychologically dependent upon the group, able to stand, if necessary, alone. And they were people who, moreover, directly or indirectly, encouraged, even exhorted, others to become individuals too. Some of these outstanding individuals were poets and sculptors. Others were prophets, mystics, and thinkers. And a few, including the greatest individual of them all, the Buddha, were spiritual masters and spiritual teachers. So from the axial age onwards, we see in history a new, a novel tendency, a tendency for the increased appearance of individuals, that is to say, of true individuals, not just the strongest and most dominant and dominating members of the group, but an altogether different type of being, a new mutation, as it were, of humanity. From the axial age onwards, therefore, we see in history two different factors at work, or even two different forces at work. First of all, there is the group. The group, of course, was present even before the actual age began. It was present from the very dawn of humanity, in the form of the extended family group, or tribe. But it's grown since then, and since the axial age in particular, the group has tended to become bigger and bigger and bigger, so that we now have global groups, global organizations of different kinds. But that's another story. I'm not going into it this evening. And then secondly, we have, in addition to the group, as well as the group, we have the individual. And very often the individual had to remain on his own. Perhaps there was only one individual in any given group, and perhaps that individual had no contact with any other individual. He was quite isolated, quite alone. But sometimes it did happen that there were several individuals in a single group. And it happened sometimes that several individuals in the same group came into contact with one another, came into living relationship with one another, and formed what we now call a spiritual community. We could therefore say that the two factors, or the two forces at work in history, are not so much the group and the individual. We could say that they are rather, in reality, the group and the spiritual community. Now the group and the spiritual community are trying to do two quite different things. In fact, they're trying to do two opposite things. The group is trying to produce good group members. Good family man, dependable employee, loyal citizen, obedient soldier, line-towing party member, etc. But what is the spiritual community trying to produce? The spiritual community is trying to produce individuals. More individuals. The group insists on conformity. The spiritual community encourages freedom. The group is based on power, which is always the power of the strong over the weak. The power of the physically powerful over the physically weak. Of the economically powerful over the economically weak. Of the strong in cunning, the strong in resource, the strong in knowledge over the weak in cunning, the weak in resource, the weak in knowledge. The spiritual community is based on metta. Its principle is metta. I suppose I ought to say, in plain English, that it's based on love. But I don't quite like the sound of the word love. I think metta is much better. Metta, we may say, is simply friendliness raised to the highest conceivable pitch of intensity. In English, friendliness is a rather weak, a rather tepid word, but that really won't do. We've got to inject into it, as it were, the strong and positive, even dynamic content that it has in the Pali, in the form of the word metta, and in the Sanskrit, in the form of the word maitri. In the spiritual community, there's no power. There's no such thing as power. In the spiritual community, there's no authority. In the spiritual community, there's no coercion. In the spiritual community, there's no violence. These things are absolutely incompatible with the spiritual community. They're compatible only with the group. In fact, they're necessary in the case of the group. The group, as such, can hardly get on without them. In the spiritual community, everything is achieved through the influence of friendliness, through the influence of metta. Everything is achieved through the influence of sympathy, through the influence of understanding. If you have to get things done by force, then it's not the spiritual community. But of course, for that to be possible, for things to be done in this friendly way, the spiritual community must be a real spiritual community, that is to say, it must consist of individuals. In fact, It can only consist of individuals. And only individuals can practice true friendliness. And if friendliness is present, then force is unnecessary. Each individual sees for himself what needs to be done in any given situation, or else he sees it as soon as it's pointed out to him in a friendly manner. And seeing it, either with his own eyes or with the help of somebody else's eyes, seeing that it's to be done, he's only too glad just to go and do it.